Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This show is for college recruiting fans.
What a run! He's got a lane! Wow! Touchdown! What an athlete!
The inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. This is Recruiting with Andrew Nemec, the Oregon Live and Oregonian recruiting expert players, coaches, and fans follow.
Ooh-wee.
Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
Hello and welcome to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. It is still the dead period until Tuesday. Coaches cannot have face-to-face contact with recruits. Limited contact over the phone, via text, all that. And so because of that, we haven't had a whole lot of commitments. Oregon State hasn't had a whole lot of commitments. We haven't seen a whole lot of fireworks. But behind the scenes, there is a whole lot brewing. And in some cases, this is the very best time to come to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec, because we can deliver some of the backstory. Four-star wide receiver Micah Pittman, I've been telling you about him now for 2 or 3 weeks. He was planning to release his commitment video about 2.5-3 weeks ago. And the prediction I made was that he'd choose Oregon. Florida's in there very much as well. There might be some dark horse candidates, but this video, it seems, has been delayed a few times. So we're going to have Micah Pittman on in the next segment. He's going to tell you maybe a date for his commitment, certainly give us a timeline for his commitment, talk about his finalists. Is it between Oregon and Florida? Are there multiple schools involved? It's something that we'd like to address, and I want to hear it from him. Because anytime a recruit delays things, that's when the rumor mill starts. And the last time I remember that happening in a big way for Oregon was with Braxton Burmeister. He was committed to Arizona. He was a parade first team All-American quarterback. And you started to hear rumors that he was going to flip to Oregon. And then the Arizona recruiting sites reported he would commit on a Sunday at 5 p.m. And then you heard Monday at 8 a.m. and then Monday at noon. And it took several days. But there were several different timelines, and no one can get a hold of Braxton Burmeister. So I thought, you know what? Enough of hearing from other people. Enough from hearing what other people think the speculation is on what his finalists are and when he wants to commit. Let's bring him on the show and ask him. So he will come on the show in this next segment and preview his decision. He's not making his decision on the air, but he'll give people an idea of where he's at, what's taking him a couple more weeks than he had anticipated, things like that. Oregon Ducks four-star signee Miles Norris will also be on the show in the second half of the show. Miles Norris committed to Oregon in the best recruiting class in the history of the program. When he committed, he was the first commitment for Oregon in the class of 2018. When he was committed, he was a five-star prospect. When he committed, he was one of the top five or six commitments in the history of the basketball program. He slid about 30 or 40 spots nationally, and the Ducks added three guys that were rated higher than him. So instead of being the fourth or fifth best recruit arguably ever for the program, now he's in the back half of the top 10 with a whole bunch of his teammates. Expectations for the Oregon basketball team are sky high. Vegas at one point had them as the fourth most likely team in the country to win a national championship. In other words, their prediction would be they'd make the Final Four. If they're one of the top four teams most likely to win a national championship, that means the expectation is Final Four. Is that how this Oregon team feels? Is this a Final Four season? Is it Final Four or bust for the Oregon Ducks? Is it national championship or bust? What are the expectations? Because they're blending a lot of pieces. Yes, they bring back Peyton Pritchard. Yes, they bring back Paul White. But then they bring in freshmen. And we haven't traditionally, even at Kentucky, it's been a tough road to win a national championship with mostly freshmen. Oregon's got five-star center Bol Bol. They've got Kenny Wooten Jr. They should have two of the best rim protectors in the entire country on the floor at the same time. They've got 6'11" Miles Norris, who can shoot the three. He can rebound. He can block shots. They've got Lou King, the McDonald's All-American, who jumped from a low five-star to arguably a guy who could be a lottery pick before he got hurt. And his stock kind of stagnated because he missed some of his senior year. But Lou King is another player who could very easily be a one and done at that small forward position. Then they bring in Ihab Amin, who you heard from just a couple weeks ago, who led the NCAA in steals two seasons ago, is considered arguably the best on-ball defender in the entire country. He's coming to Oregon. So there are a lot of pieces. How is Dana Altman going to blend it? We will talk to Miles Norris. But we got to get to the news that I reported yesterday. First reported, by the way, by Rivals. Want to give Rivals credit here. DJ Uigalele. The nation's number one prop.
You had it before the show, too.
Multiple times.
Uigalele.
Uigalele.
Okay.
Uigalele. I can do it all day long.
Uigalele.
Derailed. Show momentum derailed. DJ Uigalele, the nation's number one prospect in the class of 2020, a five-star quarterback, 6'4", 240 pounds, one of the highest-rated quarterbacks in the history of Rivals rankings. When you're a quarterback and you're the number one prospect in the entire country, you are in historic territory. DJ Uigalele. Uigalele. God, really? Perfect all the way through until we get to this point. Is planning to visit Oregon this fall. Oregon and Clemson are not his top two, even though a lot of people have made a great deal about his comments about Clemson and Oregon. He really loves Oregon and Clemson. A number of other schools are going to be in the picture, including USC, Washington, Alabama. But Oregon is very much going to be in it for the nation's number one prospect in the class of 2020. And he is arguably the best quarterback prospect in a long, long time. This kid has been dominant for St. John Bosco, which is one of the best high schools in the country. Last year, he will be this next year. And then he's got a whole nother year of high school. So there's time. But Oregon is in a very, very, very good position for him now that they're going to host him on a second visit this fall. Oregon's got the Saturday Night Live camp coming up, the last Saturday of July. Gates open at 3:15. You can go into Autzen, and it starts at 4 p.m. It's free to the public, free to park. If you remember, Oregon hosted the first one of these last year under Willie Taggart, and they invited 50 or 60 of their top prospects to come and basically work out, play 7-on-7, run drills, and get coached by Oregon coaches for an hour or two in front of the fans. And in that camp, we clearly saw some names emerge. Spencer Webb was a three-star prospect coming into that camp. And there was no question leaving it. He's got a chance to be an elite receiver or tight end in Eugene. Spencer Webb is a really good one. He added a fourth star on every recruiting service after that, after a strong showing all spring and summer. If you want a taste, if you like this recruiting thing, if you like listening, you say, man, I'd like to see these kids in person. How about seeing all of Oregon's top targets at Autzen Stadium? That's what's happening Saturday, July 28th. Again, the event starts at 4 p.m. Gates open at 3:15. It is free to park. It is free to get in. I'll be there. All the top recruiting writers will be there. It is a massive, massive event. And I'll tell you what, last year, one of the fun things, not only getting to interact with the fans, I got a chance to talk to a number of listeners and readers and things like that, was that people left that event with a guy. You can hear me talk about recruits all the time. You can hear them talk all the time, right? Because they come on this show, you listen to them, you go, I like that character. I like his personality. I like what he has to say. But you leave that camp, and you've got a favorite football player. You've got a guy that you can tell your friends about. This guy is going to be a star in Eugene. And there were so many people who left that. And then for weeks afterwards, I heard from fans, my guy is Spencer Webb. My guy is Tegan Quatoriano. My guy is, and it went on and on and on and on. And it's a really unique opportunity. And I'm really glad to see that Mario Cristobal is continuing that tradition, making it his own. Again, that's Oregon's Saturday Night Live camp, the last Saturday of July, just coming up here in about 10 days. But first, we've got to get to Micah Pittman. Is he committing soon? Has he changed his mind? Is he going to wait things out? Is it an Oregon-Florida battle? Is Oregon in the lead? Is Florida in the lead? Are there multiple schools involved? We will ask him directly next on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan. There are a lot of things I love about recruiting, but one of the things I don't is when a recruit wants to take a little time or when a recruit doesn't want to give interviews, a lot of reporters like to fill in the blanks of he wants to decide here, he's going to decide now, he's going to do this, these are his top schools. I don't like any of that. So I wanted to give four-star wide receiver Micah Pittman, one of the top receivers in the country, a chance to tell the listeners himself what his timeline is, who his finalists are, and what he brings to the table. Again, joining us now, Micah Pittman. Micah, thanks for being on the show.
Yes, no problem.
So we've heard, and you've mentioned before, that you're having a recruitment video, a commitment video made, and that you plan on releasing that soon. Is that still the plan, and do you have a date set at this point for when you're releasing that?
No, I do not have a date, but it is coming out very soon, very, very soon. I plan to figure out that date on Friday.
So you're going to announce the day of your commitment on Friday?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Who are your finalists? Because a lot of people are trying to say it's just Oregon and Florida. What are your officially your finalists?
At the time, it wasn't just Oregon and Florida. A lot of people were just saying it was Oregon and Florida. I did have a top five, Alabama, Ohio State, Nebraska, Florida, Oregon, all that stuff. But right now, I mean, I guess you can say it is Florida and Oregon. I mean, those schools have been recruiting me very heavily, and it's just been a great opportunity for every school, and I thank every school for giving me the option to maybe attend their school.
So let's go over them equally. What do you like about Oregon? What stands out about the Ducks?
I mean, Oregon's a great great place. Eugene is a nice little town. It's a great spot for the coaches, coaching-wise. I mean, they make you feel at home. They have great things to offer you as a player and as a young man. The connections with Nike is ridiculous there. And just things that they have to make you a better player, and God forbid any injury, things they can have to speed up the recovery and stuff like that and get you back on the field as fast as possible. It's hands down one of the best facilities I've ever seen. So it's great, and the coaches are great. They make you feel at home, and it's just awesome family atmosphere.
What do you like about Florida? What stands out about the Gators?
Coach Mullen and Coach Gonzalez, I mean, those guys are one of the best to do it and still doing it. They have great history, great winning history, and I believe Coach Mullen is going to change that program around and make them very successful. And all I have to say is, like, Odell and Jarvis for Coach Gonzalez. I mean, to see Jarvis and Odell's work ethic is the same thing I kind of mimic as a football player, because all I do is work out and try to get better, be the best player I can be. And to see how he developed those guys is just awesome. And if I have that same work ethic, why can't I do it type thing? So, yeah.
I don't mean to put you in a weird spot, because I don't mean to place you in a spot to criticize recruiting rankings. I know that's not why you're here. It's certainly not why I'm here. But one of the things to me that stands out in recruiting is sometimes a guy that's 6'4", that they can project really highly, is rated above a guy who might be 5'10", 5'11", 6', but can flat out play. When I watch your film, you can flat out play, and you're doing it against pretty dang good competition. How frustrating is it sometimes, and you're still one of the top 100 prospects in the country, how frustrating is it sometimes when the rankings come out and you see that you're below a guy that you know that you've outperformed in 7-on-7 tournaments, on the football field Friday nights, and at big camps across America for the last 2-3 years?
Man, I'm glad you touched on that. It's very frustrating at points. I mean, I look at a guy like Steve Smith. I definitely look at his film and see how he plays, and just like how people doubted him. I know I'm still highly ranked, a highly profile athlete, and I'm still grateful for that. But I mean, I don't pay too much attention to the rankings as is. But just looking at a guy like Steve Smith is definitely a person you probably kind of look forward to and try to model your game as. For a player like me, and he's not too much shorter than me, but he gave all he got. And there was a point in time in the league where I felt like he was the best receiver, and just looking at the receiver depth chart, it looked like he was the best one, making all the catches, leading the league in touchdowns, receiving yards, and all that. So size is never a big deal to me. I mean, obviously it is to some rankers and stuff like that, and they'll knock me off about not being able to go over the top on guys. But if you look at my film, you see me on a couple fade balls taking them up top. But it's
no doubt.
It's all good. I mean, I can't I can't control how God's going to make me tall or short or medium size or whatever, but I can't control my work ethic and me trying to be better than everybody else that's higher than me or even below me, because there's still some dogs that are ranked low and that are good and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's frustrating, but it's all good. It just keeps me motivated and keeps me hungry and keeps me going just to see, like, guys that I believe I am better than and stuff like that over me. And it's definitely a motive for me to keep going and just prove a lot of people wrong and stuff like that.
We're talking to 4-star wide receiver Micah Pittman. Your dad played in the NFL, won a Super Bowl ring in the NFL. What's the number one lesson you learned from him about the game of football?
I mean, the number one lesson from my dad I've probably learned was just to go hard every single play. I mean, my dad was a dog on the field. He was relentless. He wanted to run dudes over, break dudes' backs, just all that stuff, everything and above. He was a relentless type of player, and he just taught me heart, basically. That's a big thing. He taught me heart. He taught me how to be a great character on and off the field. I'm thankful for him, because not every player gets the opportunity to have a dad and be in their life and guide them through the way and stuff like that. So I'm grateful for him, and it's just awesome. He's taught me a lot of heart. He's given me pregame speeches and gets me riled up and stuff like that. And so I just kind of take that in, and it's awesome to have him, and I appreciate everything he's done for me.
When I ask people about you, one of the things that come up all the time is he's got a lot of dog in him. He's a pure mm-hmm. football player. And I equate those as the same thing. Pure football player. He's got a lot of dog in him. When you hear that described about yourself, when you hear people say, Micah Pittman's got a lot of dog in him, what are they saying? What are they seeing in your game that they say that?
Yeah, I mean, they call me a dog because I'm a dog on the field, man. I fear nobody. I absolutely fear nobody. I could care less if you're a corner 6'2" and 220 all muscle. I could care less. I like to see you try to out muscle me type stuff. It's just a confidence wise, just stuff like that. I believe nobody can stop me in the DB world as is. I mean, but I love the competition. I never shy away from it. And it's great, because if that dude starts yapping, I'm going to yap right back. But I know my limits, and I know when not to get carried away and stuff like that, but I'm not going to be no pushover type punk kid, you know? And so it's great. It's great to go up against the best competition. And I just think very highly of myself. And I feel like I got the swag and confidence that nobody can stop me on the field. And that's the mentality my dad put in my head. And I've been just living that since I was like 11, 10 years old.
You mentioned not being afraid of anybody, not being scared of anybody, and that actually came up in your recruitment. And I don't know where this started. You were asked about depth charts at, I believe, Oregon and Florida. And because you knew the names on the depth chart, and that's just, to me, that's a kid who understands his opportunity. You were able to name the guys on the depth chart, and because of that, somehow, because again, there was time to fill in because you set a decision date or you planned a decision, and then people were hungry for news. It turned into Micah Pittman is afraid of the depth chart at different schools. How difficult is it as a high school kid, as a high school athlete, when you have never said anything like that, to have people try to fill in blanks for you? That must be just incredibly, incredibly frustrating, especially for a person who prides himself on the football field and off of it as a guy who's going to work hard and never be afraid of anybody.
Yes, sir. It's frustrating at times. That's why I'm not the biggest fan of interviews, but it was frustrating at a point where I had to kind of tweet it out and let people know, like, I'm a guy that's never afraid of competition and never, I'm a guy who loves competition and is ready to go. If anything, competition wants me, like, if I see a corner line up and I know he's probably highly ranked or he's a guy that's been showing out the whole day, I'm going to try to line up and cut all the receivers so I can get my opportunity to do me and be the best I can be. So the competition wise, I'm never afraid of. I don't know why, fans took it into that aspect of things. So I kind of just wanted to let everyone know that I wasn't afraid of nobody, and I fear nobody on the field. And it is very frustrating touching up on that. It's like, dang, like, I didn't even mean it as that. I was just saying what I saw
right
in the receiver depth chart, and just looking at those dudes, like, I saw the Florida commits, I saw the Oregon commits. It's the same thing. Like, I know Jalen Hall was at Oregon. Like, it's not me being afraid of Jalen Hall. It's just me saying there's a receiver at Oregon
right
that I know of. Like, I just know of the name and stuff like that. It was never intended of, oh, I'm not going to Florida because of Copeland or the other receivers that are there. Like, I don't care.
I understood what you meant. Speaking of knowing guys at Oregon, this Cali flock, locally, people are making a huge deal out of this, that Oregon suddenly is going into California and able to pull top talent out of the state of California. You're a California talent. You're one of the top players in all of Southern California. What does the Cali flock mean to you? What does Oregon's sudden California pipeline mean to you? Does it make any difference in your recruitment? Does that help them in any way?
I mean, I guess you could kind of say in a way. The way the recruitment kind of started, because Oregon actually wasn't in my top 10, but they've just been climbing the ladder and climbing it very fast. So, Coach Johnson hit me up and was just like, so we're not in your top 10. I was like, Coach, you haven't been really talking to me really lately. So then he started talking to me more, and then Crystal Ball started getting into it, and everyone started getting into it. So, yeah, but the Cali flock is awesome. I mean, I know all the guys pretty well. I know Jeremiah. I know Sean. I know Josh Delgado. My bad, Josh. I know those guys pretty well. And so they're great guys, and they're great characters, and they're awesome to talk to. And they're obviously trying to recruit me heavy and stuff like that. And it's pretty good, because I know they'll be great aspects in that Oregon tradition and stuff like that, and I believe they have great potential and stuff like that.
Four-star wide receiver Micah Pittman, he will announce a decision date on Friday. He doesn't normally like doing interviews, so Micah, thank you very much for giving us some time, and I really hope that we gave you a forum to address some of the nonsense that's gone on in the last couple weeks. And when you do make your decision, sir, I would very much like to have you back to talk about it, if you'd be willing.
For sure, yes.
All right, thanks, man. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
All right, it's that time. Mike Lynch. We don't have any drop music.
This was...
What do you think? Oregon or Florida?
This was the toughest one in a long time. I was trying to listen between the lines a little bit, and at the very end, him talking that much more about Oregon and the receivers and all that kind of stuff, he was given normal answers for a while, and then when you brought up the comments and the depth chart and the Ducks receivers... He didn't mention specifically the Florida receivers. He started mentioning specifically.
Well, he mentioned Copeland. So he did mention one.
But he went deep dive into the Oregon receivers a little bit more. And he was like, sorry for forgetting one. You know, he's like, sorry,
Josh.
That's a guy who's going to Oregon, in my opinion.
Okay. Yeah. I just, you know what? I don't like when I see on social media, there's a lot of social media warriors who he's having his video made. That's out of his control. If that gets delayed by a week or two, there's not a whole lot he can do about that. And so for people to turn it into, or he's being dramatic, or fans starting to look for things to talk about, he's afraid of the depth chart. I wanted to give him an opportunity, and he hates doing interviews. I wasn't sure. He said he was going to do it. He wants to do it. He said he was happy to come on and clear the air. I wasn't sure that he was going to do it because he hates it so much. But I did say to him, I want to give you the opportunity to really explain what's been going on, because he's a high school kid. And for the last couple of weeks, people are trying to speculate on stuff he's never talked about. And it bugged me. So I said, come on, and I'll ask you some of these questions, and you can clear the air. So it is Oregon and Florida. He will announce a decision date on Friday. He has not made up his mind yet, in the sense that, you know, he's announced it behind the scenes or anything like that. It's going to be Oregon or Florida. And he's not afraid to play or go up against or compete against anybody for playing time or line up across from anybody. And you know, I think that's your takeaway on Micah Pittman.
You know, one thing I'm noticing too, when we have these these guys on, and they're talking about the different schools in terms of trying to guess where they're going to go. Oftentimes, when the only good thing they have to say about a school is I like my relationship with the coach and they've talked to me a lot, I feel like that's not exactly what you want to hear. If they say that, great, as long as they also talk about some other benefits. But he talked about the facilities and all that kind of stuff with Oregon and Florida. He goes, oh, you know, Mullen and them, they're good. They want to get Florida to winning again. You know, that to me is like, yeah, that this is the only thing I have about Florida is the coach is talking to me versus I've been thinking more about Oregon in this sense.
Here's another thing I'll add, and then we got to get to break. But to me, if a kid, generally speaking, not even talking about Micah Pittman, generally speaking, when there's a local-ish school or a regional school in a school across the country, and it's down to two or three, that kid needs to completely rave about the school across the country for it to be that school. If it, all things being equal, usually kids choose closer to home. Usually kids choose playing with guys they know over going cross country to somewhere they don't know as well. But Micah Pittman didn't say any of that, and I want to be fair to him because he's had so many different words put in his mouth in the last couple weeks. Micah Pittman did not say Oregon was ahead of Florida or Florida was ahead of Oregon. Those are his top two. He will set a decision date on Friday. I wanted to clear the air on that for him, and I'm glad we were able to do it. Oregon, in the recent polls in basketball recruiting, shifting gears here a little bit, was picked by Vegas as having the fourth best odds to win the national championship. They've dropped down. They're still considered a top 10 program odds-wise for winning the national championship. Is that what this group has set the goal as? Is it a Final Four? What do they expect? What does this freshman phenom class expect? We'll talk to Miles Norris, the four-star power forward. He's on campus. We got permission to talk to him. He will tell us what's the expectations in Eugene. Next on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan. Here's Mike with SportsCenter.
With Andrew Nimmick, featuring Oregon Live and Oregonian recruiting expert Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan.
The Oregon Ducks signed one of the nation's best basketball recruiting classes. One of the best classes in history on the entire West Coast. It's an elite group, four top 100 prospects, a pair of McDonald's All-Americans, and we've got four-star power forward Miles Norris joining us now to talk about the class and their expectations. Miles, thanks for being on the show.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
How are you getting settled into Eugene? You like it so far?
Oh, yeah, I'm loving it out here. You know, I visited twice before I came here, but been getting settled in. We got here about 3 weeks ago, so I'm getting used to the flow.
How well have you guys all gotten to know each other? Bol Bol, Lou King, Will Richardson, and yourself, that group of freshman phenoms. How well have you guys gotten to know each other? Have you had a chance to chat previously, or has this last 3 weeks been kind of an introductory course on you guys becoming teammates?
I think in the summer, over AAU days and stuff, we played with each other. I know Bol, Will, and Lou, they were with each other few months ago, like about a month ago, so I know they talked a lot. I talked to Lou like a little bit on direct message on Instagram before we came here, and then I know I talked to Will when we played him in the Fab 48 a couple years ago. So I knew him a little bit, but we're all getting to know each other better.
You were the first one to commit, and when you committed, you were considered a five-star recruit, dropped a few spots, still one of the top power forwards in the entire country. When you committed to Oregon, did you know kind of behind the scenes the wheels were turning on this class? Or did you assume that, you know, you might be the absolute headliner of this class? Did you have any idea what was happening in terms of Oregon maybe putting together one of the best classes in program history?
Well, when I first committed, I committed for myself. I didn't really know what they had going on, but, you know, I tried my best to recruit the guys that came in now. But, yeah, that's pretty much it. I didn't really know who they were recruiting or what was going on, but I'm glad we got the guys that we do now.
What do you see from each of those commitments, including yourself? What do you guys each bring to the table? We'll start with you. The term unicorn kind of gets overused, but it's 6'10", 190 pounds. You can block shots. You can shoot threes. What do you bring to the table as a big-time athlete at Oregon?
You know, I'm just going to try to bring energy and just do whatever coach needs me to do. I know they want me to be an active guy on the floor, so I think that's going to be my role coming in. So I'll just try to be as active as I can, you know, run the floor, just make plays.
Will Richardson, kind of a combo guard, can definitely play the point, can definitely be a shooting guard. What have you seen from him so far? What do you like about his game?
He plays hard. He's a really tough player. He can really shoot the ball as well. I like him a lot. He's gonna get the job done. He's gonna make a big impact on the team this year.
Lou King obviously battled some injuries as a senior. McDonald's All-American, small forward, potentially a starter right away. What do you see from Lou King? What does he bring to the table?
Actually, Lou, I've always seen him as a really good scorer, one of the best scorers in the class. So I think he's going to bring a lot of grit, a lot of toughness to the team, and just score the ball. I know he can play defense as well, so he's just going to be an all-around player, a really good scorer.
And Bol Bol, obviously a lot has been made about his shot-blocking ability. He can also hit that mid-range shot. What is he and how special do you feel like he could be now that you've got a chance to see him on the floor consistently?
After playing with him and seeing him these past few weeks, I know he's going to do big things this year. Obviously, he can obviously block shots. He's going to have a lot of mismatches probably in the post this year as well, because he could take bigs outside the key and hit the three. He could really shoot the ball well. But I think him and Kenny Woon, they're just going to be the two shot blockers that just impact the game on defense. And he's also going to impact the game on offense as well.
Now, you're selling yourself short. You can block some shots too. That's three.
Yeah, myself as well, yeah.
That's three pretty good shot blockers. How exciting.
Yeah, I think we got a pretty good shot blocking team, pretty good defensive team.
How exciting. Really,
get our minds right and just stick to defense and just get stops.
So when you've got teammates that also block shots, when you've got multiple teammates who can swat things into the fifth row, do you guys kind of fuel off that as a shot blocker when you've got like twin towers back there where somebody gets one and you feel like, man, it's going to be my turn next year in a little bit? Is there energy that builds off big block shots for other shot blockers, or does it become a competition for shot blocks? How does that work when two guys, big time shot blockers, are on the floor?
I think it's more just an energy boost. Just an energy boost, pretty much, and just get the team going. One of those big highlight plays, especially if it's a big time block. But Coach just really wants us to sit down and get stops this year, getting deflections, blocking shots, getting skills, so we get to get out and run the floor.
So I teased this earlier. I talked about it at the beginning of the show. Vegas has you guys as kind of that Final Four type of team, a team with a chance to win a title. What are your expectations as a team? What is success? What is failure? And what is, hey, we had a really, really good year this next season. Is it Final Four? Is it national championship? Is it win the Pac-12? What's the goal? What's the team goal?
I think it's all of that. I know all of us, we want to win the Pac-12 for sure. The coaches are saying we just got to live up to expectations. Everyone is expecting us to go to the Final Four. We got to start, it starts in practice. How hard we work, I think, is going to show how far we go this year in the season.
Well, I look forward to seeing not twin towers, but three towers back there blocking shots. It's going to be one of the best defensive teams in the entire country, and I'm really looking forward to see what you bring to the table. Miles, thanks for doing the show.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
I think this Oregon group's got a chance to be really good, man. Not only do you have three shot blockers, but Lou King, if he can be an elite scorer, because that's the piece that's missing, is that elite scorer. If Lou King is an elite scorer, they bring in Ihab Amin, who's one of the best perimeter defenders in the entire country, and then you've got a veteran point guard who can kind of facilitate. He's a better shooter and certainly spreads the floor better than Casey Benson did for that Final Four team just a couple years ago. I think the ceiling is really high. The sky is the limit for this group, especially with the Pac-12 having been down the last few years. You add 3-4 NBA prospects to a roster on top of already having Kenny Wooten, and that is a really, really dangerous group. It's particularly, again, Bol Bol and Kenny Wooten together might each individually be the nation's best shot blockers, but they're going to be there together, and Ihab Amin is going to take away anybody shooting outside because he's going to play up tight. If they do get by him, they have to deal with both those guys. It's a scary, scary lineup, Lynch. In a down year for the Pac-12, I see a lot of teams looking down. It seems like the Pac-12 championship, is just absolutely ripe for the taking if it all comes together.
And absolutely. And that's the one thing I always say, this is building a team with a lot of really good freshmen is kind of how college basketball works right now with a lot of the elite teams. But it doesn't guarantee anything once the tournament comes because it's a crapshoot. And when you don't have experience in that kind of a thing and you run up against a team like Bucknell, who has a bunch of seniors and they make it every single year, that could end your run really quick. But with a team like this in the Pac-12, I think that is it. It should almost be a given that they win in basketball this year with how good they are, at least on paper. But to win, make Final Four, make the national championship, I mean, that should obviously be a goal of any top team, but it is so stinking hard to do that. So, you know, for Duck fans, hope for that, of course, but never expect anything once the NCAA tournament comes.
We're going to try introducing kind of a new segment in the last segment. We'll touch on it just a little bit this week, but going forward, it'll be a recurring theme. I'm looking for questions. The hashtag will be Ask Andrew, or you can hit up the Better You Today text line at 55305. If you've got a recruiting question, ask them. Leave your name. We'll read the name. We'll read your question, and we'll get to it in that last segment. I'll always try to pick the best one, two, or three from the week, depending on how much time we got. But next, I got to talk to you about some Oregon State news. And it's not necessarily positive. We'll talk about that next on Recruiting with Andrew Nimick on Tending the Fan. We have not talked about Oregon State at all today. And there hasn't been a lot of news on the Oregon State front lately, except for maybe some not great news. Ryan Nall obviously declared for the NFL draft and went undrafted, but it looks like he might have a chance to catch on. Bright Ogwebu was suspended indefinitely. He chose to leave the program in late June. So arguably your number one offensive and number one defensive players are arguably gone. And then this week it was announced that Xavier Crawford has followed Corey Hall to Central Michigan and transferred from the Oregon State football program. He was an honorable mention all Pac-12 player 2 years ago. He had a solid start to the season this last year and then got hurt. Oregon State is arguably losing its two best defensive players and its best offensive player from last year's team. Yes, guys are getting older. Yes, they're getting physically a little more mature. But when you are 1-11 with your lone win being a squeaker against Portland State, you do not want to lose three expected returnees. Everybody's going to lose guys to graduation. But you do not want to lose arguably your three best returnees to non-graduation decisions. A transfer, a guy declaring for a guy being kicked off the team, or at least suspended indefinitely and choosing to lose the team, and then now Ryan Nall, obviously in the NFL draft, going undrafted. Jonathan Smith has a serious rebuild. And I think some of that momentum that's gained here in the recruiting trail this spring, and they did a really good job. They're selling a 1-11 program whose lone win is Portland State. They're recruiting against Los Angeles, Seattle. They're recruiting against the Arizona schools. They're recruiting against Stanford and Cal, elite academic institutions. They're recruiting against Oregon, who just has a more successful recent history than they do, and right now better facilities, certainly. It's a tough road. It's a tough road. But I thought they did a wonderful job of selling it. And they were real with kids. They told them, we're probably 2 years away from being kind of competitive in the Pac-12. I think that's realistic. I think they're 2 years away from being consistently, not winning, from consistently being competitive week to week in their games. Gary Anderson took a lot of flyers on kids that if this kid pans out, he's got a chance to be a really good athlete who is 320 pounds, but he needs to gain 70 pounds and maintain his foot speed. And a lot of times it didn't come together, and the guy they had was an undersized, slow-footed guy that got halfway to the height or halfway to the weight and lost half the foot speed. So he ended up being, And they've got still a lot of that on the roster. And when you look at why things derailed, Gary Anderson took a lot of chances on a lot of guys that if this guy pans out, he's got a real high ceiling. But if he doesn't, he's maybe not even a big sky kid, and too many of their guys ended up being maybe not big sky kids. You cannot afford, when we talk about when things really derailed for Oregon State last year, it's when they had to go to their second guys. And they are now essentially, with losing three guys they expected to return, going to their second guy at running back, linebacker, and the number one corner spot. It's a really disappointing offseason in that regard. I think some of that recruiting momentum they gained, and they did a really good job of selling the truth and getting kids to buy in, especially in the state of Oregon. I think next year's going to be rougher than many Oregon State fans expect. I think you're looking at the over-under on wins on two. Mike Lynch, if you were given an over-under for Oregon State, and we'll say like 2.1, so under is two, over is three, 2.1 or 2.5 is the over-under, what do you take?
It's so hard because you do tend to see teams rally around new coaches. I mean, we saw it with Corey Hall. They played a lot better when he took over in the first couple of games. And everyone seems to like Jonathan Smith a lot. And everyone seems to like the direction they're going. The problem is, it's starting now with the freshmen who are going to be incoming, not with the team that already existed. So I want to say over because I want to be optimistic, because with a non-conference schedule, you can win a couple of games if you play an easier team. And I haven't looked at the Beavs schedule yet this year, but I'm assuming they have a Portland State or something on there. That should be a win for them.
They open with Ohio State.
Well, I remember that. Yes. Good reminder. Thank you. They're going to lose tough. That game 85-2. They got a safety though in my head.
Yeah, that's good.
But I'm going to say cautiously optimistic over, but that's like right at three wins.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'd take the under, but it's really close. Next week we are starting officially the Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick podcast. Not only will we have this show, but also during the week, I will be recording a podcast that is a deep dive look into an aspect of recruiting, into something that's coming up. And we have got to get to Oregon Saturday Night Live camp. They're going to host 40 to 60 of the top recruits on their board. I will give you the full list. We will break it down next week on the podcast. On the show, we'll have two of the visitors talk about their expectations for the Oregon Saturday Night Live camp that will be then just 2 days away on that Saturday, July 28th. Thank you for listening to the Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick show on 1080 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.